Okay, committee, I'd like to call us back into order. The time is 1:04 and we are now on ONCR 2512. Congresswoman Rivard?
Yes, thank you. So 2512 is the resolution that we're revising to revising our FY 2025 annual revenue projection. And that resolution increased due to our true up from the gaming enterprise. And so this, okay, right now our treasurer is not here, but there's a couple of things that we discussed during the break that we've kind of been waiting on somewhat is what we're going to do with the balance of the tax relief fund. And that should be recognized in our projected revenue, because I think the law, when that fund dissolved, the balance was to be sent to the general fund, general treasury, so or the general fund and treasury. But we don't have that number and we don't feel comfortable adding it in. So if we do have a special session, I would like for the, you know, speaker, if we have a special session, that we include that as an item. And we may also be, I think we need to get an updated amount on the dividend from the Osage LLC. And if there's any increases in program income that are like a recommendation from Treasury to increase. So at this time, the bill doesn't have anything but that FY 24 true up. And I think it was 2.3 million. If you recall, that's all I have, Chair, on this resolution.
Congresswoman Rivard, is it your intention to leave it here potentially until a special session, and we can update it with other numbers, or do you want to get it out now and then do that again later?
Okay, so I don't know that we could do that because some of our appropriations are, they're dependent on this revenue, the updated revenue. So I think, I mean, there's been times we've revised this resolution at least 3 or 4 times in a fiscal year, which is a good thing, you know, as long as it's increasing and not decreasing. So I think we should just get, I feel safer if we got it out just to, so that we could, follow our law.
Okay. That's what I thought you were, where I thought you were going with it. I just wanted to double check. Committee, is there any other comment on it? Congresswoman Whitehorn?
I don't have a comment on it. I'm ready to move it if the committee is.
I believe we are.
Move to report ONCR 2515 to Congress with the due pass recommendation.
2512 for clarification.
2512. Yes, second. Ma'am.
Committee, there's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, all of those in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed, no. It passes and it will be sent to Congress with a due pass recommendation. I'm going to relinquish the chair back to Congresswoman Rivard for the rest of our agenda.
Okay, thank you. One thing I wanted to remind everybody, our treasurer had to attend a meeting with our health folks, but I did want to go over the rest of the agenda. We do have some folks that were on the call earlier. We had discussed a little bit on item 9, our audit subcommittee. And in the meantime, I've asked the budget analysts to start gathering some information for us, like the total cost of all of our audits throughout our government, including the component pieces. And also, you know, the timelines and where in law does it state that they have to have an audit. So what he's going to do is summarize that for us. So we're not ready to speak to that yet, but that's something we are working on. Congresswoman Whitehorn.
So when I see this agenda item on the agenda, I'm thinking tell me if I'm right or wrong on this. I'm thinking that you do want to put together an audit subcommittee. Is that correct?
Well, what I wanted to do, Congresswoman, was us at least have the information to discuss it and see if it's something we even think is necessary. And also keeping in mind, we're going to re-caucus at the end of session, which will be what, next week?
It will be.
And so I thought, well, I don't know at this time that we as the Appropriations Committee want to, you know, set up a committee, or we might. I mean, either way, here's the issue. I feel like I would like for us to have an audit subcommittee so that we could focus and streamline this more and make it better for our boards. Do we do it all in one place? You know, we think we're all used to attending board meetings and listening to their audit updates, but it was, let's look at the cost and just kind of reevaluate where we are with our audits, kind of like the discussion we've been having with our attorneys. And just revisiting that. And I don't know how the other committee feels. I'm somebody that would probably love to be on that committee because I love looking at audits. But I don't know that anybody else would be on that committee with me. Maybe you, Congresswoman Whitehorn, and Jordan. No, I don't know. It might just be us just sitting there. But I was just thinking it was just good information to have, just to revisit, like a summary or a snapshot of our total cost of our audits now. And, you know, is it working? You know, how do our boards feel? I'd like to know how they feel, too, about it, you know. Because if you remember, I keep going back to the gaming folks were the ones that reached out to us because they're concerned that at that time, the Gaming Commission was choosing the same audit firm. You know, so, you know, just maybe revisiting some of our protocol. And so that's what I had asked Mr. Frazier to gather. Do you have anything, Jordan, you want to speak to thus far?
Yes, Madam Chair. I had done the costs annually. I hadn't done deadlines, but yeah, the cost for health. Wyatt Sanders said that it was $60,000 about for their audit for the nation. Treasurer Batson said it was about $160,000 for gaming. Elizabeth Hembry told me it was $126,300. And for the LLC, Bourbon Hamilton told me it was $70,000. So the total was $416,300. And I sent that to the committee.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
And I think that's all good information. But I'm still going to go back to... And I realize what you said about caucusing. But say we were a newly seated committee... Do you think it's a good idea for the Appropriations Committee to have an audit subcommittee? Because I do, and have those 3 to 4 people, you know, and they don't even have to be on the Appropriations Committee. I think by our rules, we can, if we wanted Assistant Principal Chief, we could ask him to be on it. So, you know, we can, and I don't really know if it's just the chair that does those appointments. Ms. Kimball, do you know by rule?
I do have our... Okay. I do have a section out of our rules that I could read. It's not very much that will kind of get us back,
right?
You know, with more information. It just says that the Appropriations Committee's duties and responsibilities include approve the auditor, you know, for the nation's annual audit as required by the Constitution, and that a subcommittee may be established for this purpose. And then the committee chair may establish subcommittees with the majority affirmative vote of the committee. And then persons not present at the formation of the subcommittee must be notified by the committee chair and must consent to be considered as a member of a subcommittee. And subcommittees may be made up of members of the committee, members of Congress, or other persons deemed necessary by the chair or in accordance with Osage law. And then in our Osage law, in our code, it says that the treasurer shall facilitate the annual audit of the nation, including all of its wholly owned entities and business enterprises. And the treasurer shall participate as a member of the Congressional Audit Selection Committee. So that's the information that I have in our rules and code, Congresswoman. Yes, ma'am.
Continue. So, ideally, say we were a newly formed committee, my understanding is the chairperson can put those together, or you can ask the committee, hey, you got any suggestions for this?
You make that be an official document, and then this committee is who votes on that subcommittee to seat it when you fulfill all the obligations of asking the person. Is that how you understand it as well? Well, ideally, I think we should have one of those. And so I realize that we're at the end of our tenure on this committee, but maybe moving forward, we will, the next appropriations committee will do that. Because if you asked me real nice to be on the audit committee, I might, but that's just really not my, that's really not my, my deal. I don't like it as much as you do. So, you know, you might have to go outside this committee.
I know, I'll be like, who does that?
But if you ask, you know, if you couldn't get anybody else, I probably would do it with you. But I think we need one. And I think that it's really good that those people would be dedicated to looking at the things that you named, to what our budget analysts have pulled together for us, to be able to help this committee make better choices and recommendations about who we have as auditors for our nation. And the biggest thing for me on an audit, I don't know exactly what it's a big document, and for me, just in my brain, I don't know what are the most important things I need to be looking at. It takes a professional to help me know these things, but I think an audit committee would be helpful to our body to familiarize themselves with these things and to help our body know, hey, you need to look at this and it means that, because we're going to have new members flowing in and out of here the whole time. So that would be helpful, a helpful part of an audit committee to me. So I think we need one subcommittee, excuse me.
Well, and I also, in that, I was thinking kind of, you know, like streamlining the information. I know when I took office, it was like, well, where are all the audits? You know, and at that time, they were to be on the website, but it's not the their individual component audits. But to have those streamlined where we can look at them, and then also our OFPR audits. You know, there's all kind of different audits that we could discuss. We've had audits on our ARPA dollars. You know, I'd like to see, I mean, I'd still, you know, I'd love to have an audit on the gross production tax. It's always my favorite, you know, but I think that if we start looking and looking at the last things that we have had audited, you know, for me, it's like, did we have any weaknesses? And if we did, you know, were those corrected? Are we helping our entities get those corrected? You know, is there something that they need? I don't take it that an audit's a bad thing. It's just saying, this is your financial position right now. But also with our OFPR, with our plan that has been approved by this body, there's some, you know, there's some pretty good subject matters there that they're going to audit. And I think that it's to the benefit. It's not to hurt. So anyway, I think the same. I feel like if we could get a committee together just to even organize, to show where are we now, would even help, and get ready with the RFPs. I think that the RFP will be coming out for the next audit. I don't know. That's just what I have to offer committee. I don't know. Anybody else have any comments on this? I mean, I feel like the ones that y'all are the ones that don't want to participate are being really quiet now, like act like they're checking their phones and oh, there you go, speaker.
Excuse me, were you calling me out, Chair? It's not that I don't want to participate. I support it. We've already discussed this, correct? We've already had this discussion, so I said what I needed to say, but I do support it.
I was wondering too, like, you know, do you guys agree? Should we wait till we re-caucus and see who has? I mean, I think it's only fair that we have whatever that committee looks like.
But Chair, I would say yes.
I do too, because right now we have 1, 2, 3, 4, there's 6 of us here. That's half of our congressional body, and maybe we could ask that be added to the next, you know, agenda. So, Congresswoman Whitehorn?
And it's more than likely that one of us will be on the appropriation committee again. So I hope that whoever gets back on this committee pulls that forward and says, let's start this from the beginning.
one of the thoughts I had about in the proposed rule I have out is that subcommittees that have a specific task should last the complete 2-year period of a numbered Congress. Like right now, we're what number are we? We're the 9th Congress. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like those subcommittees should last, should keep that term for that whole 2 years of a numbered Congress, because that way it lends consistency to the job that they're doing. And I don't know, I just think that makes sense to me in my mind, especially for specific tasks. So that's something we could think about, whether we need to insert that into a rule. We can always do rule changes and do that, but that's just an additional thought I had about a audit subcommittee. So thank you.
Thank you, Congresswoman Whitehorn. Well, our next item then was the revolving fund discussion. And I had asked Jordan to kind of do a summarize kind of what we've done as a committee and as a Congress and where we are with the number of revolving funds and how many we've repealed. And I just kind of want to keep going back to this topic because I think we've done a lot of good work with that. Mr. Frazier, were you able to get to that yet?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. It was my understanding that I was just supposed to have information on the revolving funds and their balances. so I apologize for that misunderstanding on my part. But it looks like the ones we have balances for that were provided by Treasury, there are 28. That there were a couple that the Congress had, or I won't say the Congress, certain members had discussed repealing, like the Education Trust Revolving Fund that hasn't been used in quite some time. And the balance is negative for some reason, negative $1,103. The Economic Development Revolving Fund, which also has been inactive for quite some time, I think at least since I've been here. The Education Partnership Fund, I'm not aware of any appropriations that have gone to that in a while, but it shows a balance of $131,000. And I believe those are some that have been, their repeal had been discussed. That's all I have at this time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, committee. Any other discussion on our revolving funds? I think that, you know, the main question I had during this session was the tax relief fund balance, and I think we've talked that to death. So I think that Treasurer Batson, you know, once he can verify the balance in that fund, that we do need to amend it into projected revenue. And I think that we just need to, I just think we need to revisit these. I see the intent, and I like when that these funds were established and they were specific. But Congresswoman Whitehorn, I was thinking about this yesterday, talking about the land committee. And I was, you know, just thinking about us having different revolving funds to purchase land. You know, why do we have two separate ones, you know? And then we have, I just been looking at things in a different view, different lens this year, about looking, you know, bigger picture and looking at those funds and how they could work better for all of us, the executive branch, legislative, and I've been reaching out to the users of these funds. That to me is the most important. You know, what can we do better? Congresswoman Whitehorn?
I think the land purchase funds were done at separate times, but even before I got on Congress, but they have been utilized, and I agree with you, and that's what I see about the beauty of a Natural Resources Committee is it's a place here in Congress where all that stuff can go on a table, and we can look at comprehensive
legislation to use a consolidated fund for land purchases. And I think just like we do our permanent fund, and I'm so glad that you do that every year, you stick back money in our permanent fund. I've noticed since I've been on Congress that you do that. And I think that we need to be doing that to a land purchase fund too, because I believe that every acre that sits inside our ranch out there that comes up for sale, that it's crazy if the Osage Nation is not buying, is not purchasing it. And if you don't have money in a fund, you can't do that. And if you don't have vision or a plan, you can't do that. So I think that looking at funds is very wise to do that. But I also think you need to have the legislation behind it to make it work right. And if it doesn't work right, amend the legislation to where it's usable to the people that need to use it. You know, I just see that. I see that as a function of this body to do some of that comprehensive, to help with some of that comprehensive long-term goals and planning as far as our assets are concerned. And I'm going to say something else. This is not about land, but I like the way that you track. Before, we didn't track our assets like you have done to track our assets. And thank you for doing that, because now we see what we have. We see our projects that are out there and the money that's in them. So I like how you've done that as well.
Well, thank you. Any other questions or comments, guys, on our revolving funds? And I think Congresswoman Whitehorn, you have a bill that creates a fund. Does it or not? Is there another bill out here that's creating another revolving fund? What is it? I can't remember. Well, anyway, I'm just saying that now that we, when they're created, I feel like now we're looking like, okay, let's see if we can merge that with another fund. What I really, you know, what ARPA taught me, I think, was I wish we had an infrastructure revolving fund. I really do, to handle our water, utilities, and all of our, you know, lines, things like that, sewer problems, all of these issues, because I feel like that's something that has taught me that's important during these last years is our need. I mean, we hear it today. So, any other comments? Okay. The next item then was our financial reporting deadlines, and again, if you'll see, I had Jordan print off. This is something that when I took office too, we were getting all these reports, okay? And I know because I was subjected to them when I worked on the other with the executive branch, in that there were all these reports that are required in law, okay? And I just wanted this committee to kind of revisit them. To see, you know, these reporting requirements, are they, I feel like there are definitely some that are very necessary, some that may not be. Do we need to just revisit it? That's all I'm saying. Because again, that's, you know, no harm, no foul, but there are reports that we receive and then we're not really discussing them in the committees. Like I felt like the intent may have been that with the prior Congresses. And so, but what I'm saying is if we're requiring the executive branch to report to us certain things, you know, then we should discuss them. And so I just wanted you guys to kind of familiarize yourself with this is where we are now. And I just want you to know, in an olive branch style, when this was created, we also shared this with the chief's office, and we shared it with Treasury. And so that way, because it was so much within our code, and it took Jordan a while to create this, and he's done a marvelous job, and he's also kept it updated as we updated our codes as well. Congresswoman Whitehorn?
So... I like this document, and it's pretty massive, and I think we need to do something with it as a committee since it was generated here. But I'm wondering if this is a like an appointed subcommittee
of this body to get together and work on that. And Clark, do you know, do subcommittees have to do the same type of notification that a regular standing or select committee would have to do? Do you have any knowledge of that? Because I don't. Oh, you were you working? Good night. I'm sorry. I'm from Oklahoma, you guys. I probably just say Clark. So do you know if subcommittees have to give the same type of notification that our standing and select committees do? Say,
I don't think so.
You don't? Right.
I think going through this document, I think it's too comprehensive for us sitting here in an appropriation committee to go through line by line and try to look at the intent of everything and make recommendations on it. But I think it definitely needs to be done, Congresswoman. But I think that would be maybe the work of two or three people sitting back at a table doing that and dedicating themselves to do that. Now, I would do something like, I do like this kind of stuff, so I would do something like this. I would get together and help whoever wanted to do that, or get with Jordan, whatever you think. But I think some recommendations need to be made on it and see if really all this reporting we feel like is necessary, because we don't want people to do things just because the law says so, if it's not, if it has no function.
Well, and it could have been that, you know, before it fit that time and that
That's
need.
True.
You know, and I can see it, you know, but there are some that, you know, so, but here's the thing, when those folks on the executive side or whoever's the person that's having to supply the report, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I don't want to break the law.
Right.
You know, and in some of this, there's repercussions of that. You know, there's fines and things of that nature. So I just wanted to share this information with you guys, and it's just something that I wanted to bring up. It's not part of our rules or responsibilities in our committee, but I just thought it's something I wanted to share with you, because this is where I go when we look for like our financials. Mm-hmm. And you'll also see it pops up on your Outlook, because Jordan has created these events to remind us that those reports are due. So we actually, it's alive. It's alive. It's just that, you know, after we receive the report, we don't really do too much. That's what I wanted to look at. And so I just wanted to share this with you. I feel like we could probably stamp it in and give this to the full body of Congress. I don't know, Jordan, if you had sent it out to the full body or just this committee, but I think if we could, you know, get this shared with everyone, then they could look at it. I think it's good information.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Any other questions about the required reporting committee? If not, and again, these are some of the, we're knocking out some of the topics that we have to do in this committee. So the next is our investment overview. And I think Mr. Manzer is on the call with us. And Scott is our appointee from our congressional side to the Oversight Investment Committee. And I just want to say thank you, Mr. Manzer, for participating in probably one of the best committee meetings you've ever attended. But I just want to say thank you for waiting so that we could get to you and just say hello and welcome and good afternoon. And we'll let you speak to, you know, whatever your thoughts are right now, and if you have an update that you could provide to us. And unfortunately, Treasurer Batson's not with us right now, but we welcome you. So I'll turn it over to you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. We can hear
okay.
you.
Okay. Again, I'm Scott Manzer. I'm Zooming in with you from Bakersfield, California. And it wasn't a bad, I've attended more committee meetings that I didn't care to be in. So this one was okay. But thank you for inviting me and recognizing me. And I do have some remarks I'd like to make. And I've talked to several of you about these things, and I think they're very important. I just wanted everyone to get updated on what's been going on with this particular issue. I'm addressing some what I think are serious concerns with the recently completed RFP process for an investment management firm for the nation's permanent fund, which is roughly between $37 and $39 million. So it's quite a big fund. So I've broken down my topics into five different things, and I'll go over them pretty quickly, if you don't mind. First of all, you are aware of the RFP, and you do know that we have an investment management firm that handles our monies. And it's been that way since I've become a committee member back in September of 2019. We've recently completed an RFP for a new management firm that Appropriations Committee approved back in November. But it's been over 150 days since the agreement with Capital Investment Advisors was reached. And this is the worst possible.
Scott, you muted yourself.
Okay, I'm back, right?
Yes, you cut off at 150 days.
Okay. It's been 150 days since the agreement with Capital Investment Advisors was reached. This is the worst possible time to be without money management. In December of 24 and January 25, the market reached record high numbers, but we weren't able to take advantage of it because our money's not being managed. In February, March, and April, and continuing even now, the market has experienced 9 of its 10 highest daily losses in the market's history. But since our money wasn't being managed, the losses weren't mitigated. And I'm talking about over $500,000. And where do I get that $500,000? The previous money management firm, USI, that's the firm we used to use until last November, they invest all our monies in mutual funds. Mutual funds, it's pretty boring, but they have management fees associated with them. And the Investment Oversight Committee for the last couple of years has been seeing what these costs are with this money management firm, and that's why we went out to bid. The new firm that we chose, Capital Investment Advisors, doesn't use mutual funds. They use something else as effective with no cost. So each day, we're losing over $300 a day in management fees alone. And over 150 days, that's over $45,000 loss. If you take into consideration the market fluctuations over the same 150 day period, the investments that Capital Investment Advisors would have used compared to the mutual funds would have generated 1.25% more income. 1.25% of $37 million, which is what we had back in November, is $462,500 that we don't have. Those two numbers together, the market fluctuation cost and the management fee cost, because our money hasn't been managed, is over $500,000. So whatever our balance is today, and it fluctuates so much on a daily basis, it should be over $500,000 more than that. A second point, why is Capital Advisors being punished? In September of 2024, an independent rating performed by the then three committee members, that was Treasurer Batson, myself, and the Harrison, who used to be the controller, Capital Advisors scored the highest of all the RFP respondents, rated by the three of us. But as its protocol, the committee was not advised by procurement until after the oral interviews that Capital Advisors had been the overall top choice. What happened between then and now to warrant a new RFP? I don't know. But when Michael Parsons, who's the Capital Advisors, our money manager, became aware of Treasurer Batson's problems with the Charles Schwab application form, he reached out to the Treasurer's office for possible solutions. He reached out to TI Trust. TI Trust is the Charles Schwab equivalent of the old money manager. He reached out to them and was told, they were told by the Osage Nation not to talk to him. who at the Osage Nation? I'm not sure, but that was very troubling. Third, effective April 11th, which was a week and a half ago, I noticed on the website that we are out to RFP again for these money management services that usually comes through the Investment Oversight Committee. It always has in the past. So that was a shock to me that we were going out to bid on a process we just did. But I understand it's the treasurer's decision, but I just thought I should be kept in the loop. And the troubling thing about the new RFP, which I don't understand why we're doing, it doesn't include the important language that the previous one did that requested that the responding firms include their years of experience, be registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Was that an oversight? Because as an outsider, it almost looks like there's a new kid on the block somewhere that may not meet the necessary requirements and didn't respond to the previous RFP, but now wants to be the money manager. I hope that's not the case, but I don't know why else we're going through this process. The next main item is the Charles Schwab brokerage account application. Again, Charles Schwab is the money person for our money management firm, Capital Advisors. The Charles Schwab account application in question was signed by Chief Standing Bear on December 5th, 2024, and by Treasurer Batson on December 11th, 2024. This is after this committee approved the management firm on November 19th. This 21-page application form also contains 2 pages of personal information for each, for the chief, the assistant chief, and the treasurer. It's a very thorough application. The completed signed form was then returned to Charles Schwab, but on page 19, Treasurer Batson made them, he whited out something. He whited out where it says non-incorporated entity and wrote in tribal government. To me, that's like, when I'm filing my individual income tax return, I don't like the word individual, so I white it out, put Scott Manzer. You just don't do that to forms, but it was. So that was sent in, and Charles Schwab, of course, didn't accept it. On page 4 of that 21-page agreement, it talks about tribal governments as part of this non-incorporated entity. And it's important to know that Charles Schwab has over 24 tribal accounts just like this, many Oklahoma tribes that use the same application form. So when Charles Schwab sent this back to the signature pages for the chief and the treasurer to sign again without the whiteout, that's when it seems like the problem started. Treasurer Batson told me on the phone that he didn't like the idea of being called a non-incorporated entity because that's assumes you're a small failing entity. I don't share that opinion, but that was his thought about not wanting to be called a non-incorporated entity, but tribal governments are. Finally, during the recent completed RFP process, I spoke regularly with the procurement, who, by the way, they do a fantastic job on these RFPs, and the Attorney General's office to assure that all the bases were being covered. I was assured that they were. Among those contacted over this period were Abby Tolson, Ashley Lockett, Clint Patterson.
Scott, you muted yourself again.
Okay, here I go. I was assured that all those things, all the bases that we were trying to cover were covered. And I talked to Abby Tolson at length, Ashley Lockett, Clint Patterson, Cora Lorenzo, and Trey Gill. And recently, I reached out to the chief's office and met virtually with the chief, Jason Zahn, and one other professional as a female, but I didn't catch the name. They, too, reached out to the treasurer about what's going on here. Why isn't this being negotiated? And it's just one man's decision to make. And the chief even suggested that perhaps the solution would be to add to our legal documents naming the Osage Nation as a non-incorporated entity. That would be an answer. It'd take a long time. But I'm just concerned that we went through this process to get a new money manager because we needed a new money manager. We picked the firm that all three of the members chose. We went through the process. We notified them. We notified the others that they didn't get it. And then now this is happening again. And I don't know what Capital Advisors or Charles Schwab has done wrong. Unless they're missing something here. I hope my frustration is showing, but I don't know. I just don't know. And I'm hoping some of you might have some answers for me or questions about the things I've talked about. One of the firms that responded to the previous RFP handles the Cherokee Indian tribe. I contacted them. They came out like third out of four. But I contacted them to see where does the Cherokee house their money? And they said, we always try to go with Charles Schwab. Charles Schwab isn't the only game in town, but it's surely the biggest. You know, there's Fidelity. I don't know. You probably know some of the names by the commercials that are on television. But they're all going to consider Osage Nation as a non-incorporated entity if that's the issue. But I don't know. But now we're in the process of going out for another bid. I don't know if I'm part of the process anymore, but I'm assuming those new firms will be interviewed, the ones that submit proper documentation. And a lot of ones that presented ones before have contacted me and said, what did Capital Advisors do that 4 months into the contract they're being replaced? I don't know. They haven't done anything wrong. So that's it. That's my report. You've been updated. We're down a lot of money because our money isn't properly being managed at all. The committee hasn't met. Some of you last November, Capital Advisors, because at the time they had secured that we just hadn't, they had been selected as the new advisor, came to Pawhuska and met with some of you virtually. I thought then the ball was rolling, and now 150 something days later, nothing's happened, and we're losing money by the day. So thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you, Scott. We appreciate you attending the meeting and giving us an update as our congressional representative on this committee. But thank you. We did hear somewhat from Treasurer Batson. I think it was a couple of days ago in reference to the resolution that Congressman Potts had filed. And I don't know, was there any suggestions from this committee as to how we address this issue or not? The only solution that I'm thinking while you were talking is that Speaker reach out to, Kaihika and Treasurer Batson, and that's the only thing I can think of is like, well, what's the status? I mean, we talked about it a little bit via resolution being filed, but, maybe it's a time that Speaker and Chief have a conversation and the Treasurer about it. That would be my recommendation because so that we can, the goal is resolvement. So it's, figure out what we can do to resolve this issue so that we can properly, manage our money, our investments at this time. Now, Congresswoman Whitehorn.
So I have to think about the congressional role in this and what our role is we created the investment oversight committee by law explicitly with the treasurer and then an appointment by the treasurer and this body, I believe, is how the law reads. I haven't reviewed it in a while. We're having a breakdown somewhere when we do go through the RFP process and a committee selects a vendor and we pass a resolution of Congress accepting who that money manager is, and then things things aren't executed. There's a breakdown somewhere. There either we have a weakness in our law and how, or otherwise. So I think we have some responsibility as Congress to try to look to see how we can get things back on the right path, because they aren't on the right path right now. And when we're experiencing loss, a daily loss in our investment, that's not good. And so I don't know. I don't have solutions right now in my mind. I don't know. I would think the treasurer should be on that, the investment oversight committee, but I don't know. I don't know what the law says about him being the sole person to sign the contracts, or is that just up to the chief? I don't know why the contract had to be signed by both the chief and the treasurer. So yeah, there's a lot of questions there of how we're in this place. I know that the contract has not been executed and signed how Charles Schwab wanted it signed. So I don't know the answer to those questions at all of why both the chief and the treasurer signed it. Why could it not just be the chief's signature? You know, things like that.
Understood. I think I was looking at some of the, you know, the definitions for the treasurer, and it does say that the treasurer shall sit as chairperson of the Investment Oversight Committee and shall be the Osage Nation's liaison with the investment manager. And so, well, and also, just, you know, again, Treasurer Batson isn't here, but I do appreciate hearing the concerns of our representative, and I just still think that we should get some clarity. I think it's important. So that my suggestion is always to go through the speaker when it's, there's nowhere that puts that in this committee. You know, I think it's a congressional speaker. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't disagree with you, and if that is what the committee wishes, then absolutely we will do that.
Okay, thank you. That's where I feel more comfortable, committee. So we just ask the speaker to reach out for some clarity, and then after we re-caucus, we put this item back on the agenda. If someone back on this committee, and we revisit it again, we have to. I want everybody to be comfortable. I want the treasurer, I want the members of this oversight committee, and everybody to be comfortable in who we choose to manage our money. And so, but I just wanted to put it on our agenda because, you know, I feel like it was an item that needed to be discussed. And thank you, Mr. Manser, for your patience.
Yeah. Thank you for listening.
Most certainly. Well, we have about 10 minutes, and one item I'd like to talk about quick as the COLA discussion, which is item 13. And as you know, again, in law, it states that the treasurer has to report to Congress by a sub-certain date, what the COLA looks like, what the inflation, and then it's our job to either approve that increase or not, or increase the percentage presented or decrease it. But what's happened is in the law has a date that he do that by. I think it's May 15th. It's in our required reporting schedule, and so he would do that. But what's happened is because we've moved our budget date to August rather than July, and I think that could be part of the reason, but I feel like that should be discussed during HUNCA, that we approve a COLA rate at that time so that they can ready to prep, be able to prep for CEJO when they send their support docs down. And so I invited Mr. Julio, he's our HR director. So I was kind of just wanting to hear from him and the treasurer in reading the current law and just kind of talk about the COLA a little bit. But I do feel like the date requirement may need to be amended, and maybe we could do that during special session. But the goal is, if this body approves a COLA, that we get it to Treasury, or that we get it to the executive branch, so they have a time enough to create their budgets that acknowledge a COLA. That makes sense. So I was wondering, Julio, do you have any comments to our current COLA procedure and process, and any obstacles or barriers that we have in place that we could do better?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To be very honest, our current Osage Law 7104 is very strong. I do agree with you that the date of May 1st that is stated here in the law needs to be moved just a little bit. And I believe my recommendation was July 1st. That gives us plenty of time to have that discussion. And when it comes to the rest of the items, we're doing everything exactly. We're going by the CPI. We're adding a variance for inflation as well. And we're checking everything we can when it comes to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The process is very strong, I believe, here at the Osage Nation. There may be just some language that we want to implement just to make sure that we are being clear and transparent with everyone.
Okay. Do you guys have any questions for Julio at this time? Do you feel then you mentioned the date of July. Are you thinking that the rate that may be sent down to discuss may be old at that time? Is that why you would say from May to July? I'm just curious.
Yes, Madam Chair, that is correct. And currently it's May 1st that by law, item D be requested by the Office of Treasury to Congress by May 1st of each year. I think that gives us a true opportunity for a little bit more time to really calculate, put a worksheet together, and provide data when it comes to total cost implication across departments, long-term effects, pay equity, and compression as well. And that allows us to make a more sustained decision.
So you feel then that the COLA actual number that we would be presented would be more accurate using a July data rather than May?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair. That is correct.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
So seems to me like we've been having to pass an outside appropriation bill for COLA specifically. Am I correct? Did we do that? And that it's not presented in a budget, it hasn't come down presented in the budget for that following fiscal year that we passed during the CISO session. And I thought we wanted to have a remedy for that, to where we could include COLA into the main appropriation bills. Do I have a proper understanding of that?
Yes, because it sounds like there's two things, and I agree with Mr. Nunez about the actual inflation rate would be more effective or more accurate at that time. But for us to get it to approve it, the law says that we have to approve that rate. It doesn't say we have to, but we need to consider it, you know. Because the way I read the bill or in the code is that the treasurer's to send that to us, and as that's his recommendation, then it's up to us if we adopt it or not. It's not that we have to annually. It doesn't say that. That's not how I read it. It just says that if we're going to, then that was to be the rate that we would use that recommendation from Treasury. But also to get it to executive in a timely manner before they present their budgets, because we'd want it to be included in their outlay. I mean, it's going to be included and affect their outlay. And so I want to meet in the middle and figure out a way that we can, you know, make sure that this happens. Or is this a discussion that, you know, is this something that was intended to be every year? Was this something that could we possibly look at it every other year, every 5 years? You know, how is this in relation to like our bonuses or performance evals? And you know, this kind of goes back to pay, and that, which is a larger discussion that I haven't had since we've been on Congress at all. I mean, because you guys used to talk about it quite frequently. But Yeah, but I remember. But I think there was even staff or employees that even picketed at one time. Yeah. Congresswoman Whitehorn.
So my recollection of it in Congress is we always tried to figure out what the merit system was that the Constitution called for. Did that have to do, did your merit have to do with your pay rate and your pay raise? And there were all kinds of ideas on it. And truly those discussions and the interaction between executive and Congress did get very volatile a few times. So I think that the COLA was a response to trying to figure out what that a merit system of pay was. And I don't even think that the Constitution actually says that, what a merit system is. Does that include your pay? I think that the conclusion was, well, now you have evaluations and you can get bonuses on that, but we're just going to do a cost of living adjustment as far as keeping the inflationary rate and the pay competitive. I think that was the response. But then I think we've created a whole other, not a set of problems, but just some hurdles about how do we get that, what's a timely way that that's reported to this body, and how do we actually get that cost of living adjustment into everybody's pay scale for the next coming fiscal year when they send the budgets down? I think that's the problem right now. So I think we can get that jagged edges smoothed off of the timing of it all, and we may have to amend the law to make that happen, but right now, this is just my first really big thought into it. So,
well, and again, I was thinking this could be another subject matter we could add to the next agenda, whoever's sitting here in this committee or anybody on this committee that'd like to pick up this piece and evaluate it and analyze it. I think it would be worth it. But that, I just, you know, these are things that we have to discuss. But again, I think, Speaker, if we do have a special session, again, that this item be included, I think it's because it is going to affect our bottom line. And so,
if I may.
Yes, ma'am.
I think the biggest thing is we need to polish out some timing issues of reporting and when to get it down here, how it's going to be included in the trailing years budget and appropriation. And I think that's, from what I can see, that's the problem that we're having right now.
Yes, ma'am. Well, that's, so it's 2:00, and I just wanted to say thank you to the committee. I do not have another meeting scheduled. I'm hoping that there's no more appropriation bills filed between now and Wednesday. No, I'm just kidding. However, we'll do it. Whatever Speaker says, if she puts it in this committee. Okay. But our last item, I'll just tell you, was the accounting policies and procurement, and we've received the procurement, so you guys can read those. And then we haven't received any updated accounting, but we can follow up on that. But I just wanted to say thank you to the committee, and I've enjoyed working with each of you, and I just appreciate your time and being patient with me with the longest committee meetings. But the last item is adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say yes. All right. Thanks, committee.